We're listening to Pippin. Yeah. What's with that?
I was wanting to listen to it.
I guess we... Okay. By the time we're like, 2 minutes in, you'll be back down. Hi, welcome back to Scratch This Podcast. My name is Dan Tyra. It's nice, Ben.
My name's Callum Alexander.
That was an inside joke for those of you wondering. And I'm Matt Mace.
And we've just spent the last 5 minutes reminiscing on Pokemon, so we're on a bit of a gaming high right now.
Yeah, it's we are indeed.
Got Matt Mace awake, more awake than he's been for the last 2 years, so we'll...
Well, I wouldn't say last 2 years, but last 2 minutes, well, 20 minutes. Hour.
No, it's 20 minutes.
Yeah,
20 minutes. Today on the podcast, we've actually gone out and done something special. We've done something big. We've listened to the Pokemon theme tune on YouTube. And got an interview as well.
We've got an interview, yep.
Yeah, we've got an interview with... Well, Callum, you sorted this out, so I'll let you explain this a little bit.
Yeah, it's the developer of Fists of Awesome.
Which is an iPhone game coming out in, I think it's March, April time?
Yeah, and it's also coming out on the Ouya. And
Android.
And Android.
And hopefully PC.
PC and Mac, and it's a game of where basically you punch bears in the face and you're a time-traveling lumberjack.
Which if that doesn't persuade you to buy it, what's wrong with you?
And to be honest, in an industry where it's hard to find a truly original IP, that is a truly original IP. And
you seem to disagree with that, Ben.
I think we've, the Callum Alexander rant train's leaving the station.
No, I'm saying truly, like, underlined and highlighted and bolded, and
it's a very
size 72
idea.
Font. It's very original. And so Nicole, the
Nickel. Well,
we're awful at pronouncing names because we're bad journalists. But
yes.
We've got him talking his game, talking Ouya, and that, and Kickstarter, because it was a game funded through Kickstarter. So, you know, just talking about that, really.
Yeah.
Talking games.
And we've also got, obviously, our now infamously just poor news section, which we'll be talking a little bit more about the Ouya. And then also later on, we'll be talking more. If you've been following us on Twitter, hopefully we'll have some new followers listening today. We're running a competition at the moment, so we'll be going into a little bit more about there, and we'll probably think of something else to make that section a little sweeter. But right now, as ever, let's talk about what we've been playing this week. I'm going to start off with you, Matt, because I think I've got a few games. I know one you're going to be talking about.
Well, I haven't actually been playing that much. I've been looking into the economic decline of the Angolan mineral deposits in the stock exchange.
And what's going on?
It's not good. It's not good. There has been an economic decline of Angolan mineral deposits, which is, everyone knows that the stock needs Angolan mineral deposits.
I was thinking of... I was going to invest all my money in the Angolan mineral deposits. What's your advice?
I would give it a year or two.
Okay.
They have the know-how to turn it around, but I can't see it picking up anywhere in the near future.
Let's see how you link this into games.
And on that note...
And just so everyone knows, that's Matt Mace breaking our podcast, doing a community interaction section in the news bit.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a request, and request granted. What have I been playing this week? Well, I've pretty much been playing the same things as Ben. And Ben introduced both. I use games, like, one of them's more of a story than a game. But I played Plague, which Ben introduced me to, which is an extremely... Well, I think we've all been playing it, haven't we?
Yeah.
It's an extremely fun... kill the world with viruses
simulator,
yeah, which I'll let people that have spent more time on that talk about it, because I've only poured a couple of hours in, well, if that, like 20 minutes, half an hour into it. And I've been playing Zombie Run, which is an app by
Six to Start.
It's Star, who Ben is going to be interviewing, not for the podcast, but
no, well, I doubt, I might have a word with them, see if they want to do anything with us, but it's for my MMP project.
There you go. And it's basically, you strap your headphones on, you go out into the outside, the outdoors, the
into
sunshine,
the world.
Into the wild, your run. And
the graphics are amazing.
You can't fault the graphics. They're incredibly lifelike.
The storyline's actually not that bad this time, because you have someone narrating to you a game, a scenario in which you're involved and you are in a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, because I bought that in the summer, and it's kind of like you're running, and isn't it someone that's in a, someone that can see you? And they're saying, okay, you know, you need to get some medical supplies. There's a hospital over there. Run that way. Okay, you're running the right way.
Yeah. Stuff. I mean, it doesn't tell you in what direction to run.
Which is probably a good thing.
Yeah. It doesn't actually matter.
Yeah. So you could, if you wanted to, in theory, you could just be on a treadmill or doing laps.
I think treadmill would be better, personally.
Although, would it work on a treadmill unless you're using the accelerometer?
Yeah.
Because it's either, there's two ways it works. It either tracks your position via GPS to see how far you've run and how quickly you've run in that distance, which is a little bit scary, because one of the modes in there is the zombie chase mode, which I put on the other night. And as I was saying to Matt, I went out about like 6 when it was not pitch black, but quite dark. And I'm coming up to the house and I just hear a low moan, and I've never run faster in my entire life.
I was running down the street when I heard my moan, and I nearly clattered into an old woman just trying to avoid the barrage of non-existent zombies. But it is, I've done one mission, so I can't really comment on how good it is. It's decent. I wouldn't say it's like revolutionary or anything like that. It's
a nice different way of getting running, rather than just the usual listening to your tracks and stuff. Obviously, it does pull up music, but there's that kind of narration, the story, like you said, the zombies behind you. It's easier, because I think with exercising, like cardio, the best thing to do, rather than constantly think how far you've run and stuff, is literally just to kind of clock out and let your brain focus on something else, and then just forget about how long you've run for. So if you are paying attention to the story and listening to it and stuff.
And on the notion of running, I have become a king amongst men on Tempo Run 2.
You have?
I have. Ben dethroned me temporarily. I think last time this podcast was out, I was still top dog.
You were
dog.
Top with
20 million.
20 million. Then I dethroned Matt with 21 million.
And I last night, I bounced back a big old 29 million.
I'm still on 5. I'm just a little pauper. Matt, you realise now, though, Ben will not stop until he beats your score.
I do realise that, yeah. But
the
still,
only problem is 29 is a very high score. We're talking Luke Shaw levels.
Yeah,
there.
So yeah.
We're talking dissertation and MMP taking a definite backseat.
I'm glad I've got it out of the way while I can.
I'll have to just up my run now, so it can't be the run until I reach 10 million without using a save me.
I got to like 15 million without using a save me.
Oh, that hurts. But yeah, just to sort of just round up my opinions on the zombie run as well. Like, I really like it so far, and although I've only done the one mission, I think I'm going back today to do another one, and I'm going to do a few more before I go down to London on Monday. But I think I've always needed a bit more encouragement, or a bit more. I just need something sometimes a bit more with my exercise, and this is a really cool idea, and I'm really digging it so far. So I'm going to keep on with it. Anyway, Callum, what have you been playing this week?
I've been in and out of Ultimate Team as per always.
As your cycle dictates that you get out of it around Christmas and come back into it around this time of year.
Yeah.
I reckon you'll go out of it again towards the dissertation handing, and then during the summer you'll heavily invest in it again.
Exactly. That's the way it works.
Callum's version heavily invest.
Heavily invest
time.
With
time.
Hours. Time and coins earned in the game. Yeah, not heavily invested with a paycheck.
Yeah.
No.
Also got played a couple levels of Hitman Absolution.
You any closer to finishing it yet, or
are you any closer to starting it?
No, well, I started it.
I'm about halfway through. I completed a mission very well, I'd like to say. Although I think one guy did spot me just before I punched his face off.
Pushed his face off.
Do you watch Two Best Friends on YouTube?
No.
They do like game run through. They did a Hitman Absolution one. It's absolutely hilarious.
I still like the Aussie gamer Hitman Blood Money ones, but so yeah, I'm really enjoying Hitman. It's the thing about Hitman, like you say, it's not something you can just kind of, okay, I'm just going to get a quick session in before doing some work. You have to be like, right, I'm going to dedicate the next few hours to playing this. And I haven't really had the chance to do that, so.
Yeah. And it's sort of, that's sort of what, like, half my point is. I want to sit down and play it, but I'm not. It's just like, with Hitman especially, because when I was playing it back at home, it was one of those things where, because levels are broken into little chunks, you could sit there for 10, 15 minutes and get a little chunk done.
But once you get that, you kind of get sat there.
Especially if it's just one where it's just like sneak past the policeman.
Yeah, I don't like those missions. But the missions I'm on at the moment are good, because the one I just done was three. You're in a kind of fairly open level. There's some two-tier buildings, garages and stuff. It's just kill those three people and get to the exit.
That's pretty cool.
And the next one I've got is you have to take out this guy's gang and incapacitate him. And I gave it one go, and I was caught trying to put sleeping pills on the pizza. So, like, because I got these sleeping pills, got in a costume that, because it was like a barber costume, so no one recognised me. I could just walk around and I'd be incognito. It's fine. And there's a pizza there, and it was like, oh, please. Seeing pills on the pizza, I was like, this is what you got to do. And this guy's like, hey, you better not touch that pizza. So like, okay, I won't. Kind of hung around for a bit and thought, yeah, this is the time. Put him in, and they literally all saw me. But and also tried to had a little Halo 4 session, because I was listening. I do listen to our podcast just to verify the quality of it. So I was listening to our last week's podcast, playing Halo 4, and so I was playing the single player, and the single player's all right. Like, Halo gameplay is decent, you know, it's good sci-fi first person shooters. It's solid, it's enjoyable. And then I thought, oh, I'll give online a go. I shouldn't have done it, it just annoyed me. All I did was one game was just too laggy, I just couldn't do anything. Another one, every time I stood outside like a base, I'd either get sniped, like shot by a banshee, or like
But that is also then a problem with online games in general. If you go into them like 2 months after, you're playing with people who have done nothing but play that game online. Like, it, I think like the first month is fine. Afterwards, it's just like, this is my game now for the next 10 years.
Something I like about FIFA is, like, obviously, you know, I'm not going to say that every person out there plays well, like, you know, plays like as chivalry, you know, but FIFA, it's you versus them, and you can have fun games, but it's easier just to have fun and just play. But whereas a game like Call of Duty, a game like Halo, you know, shooters, you just get people so determined to improve their KD, you know, they're absolutely obsessed with it. They'll just get a sniper and sit at the very back and just play like assholes, really. And that's why I like, say, Gears of War. Obviously, it does have snipers in, and you do have people camping with a sniper, but only one person out of each team is ever going to have the sniper, because the way it respawns, and it's kind of just frantic, everyone's getting in each other's faces, kind of shooting. And I much, much prefer that kind of online play of just fast, furious fun, rather than people that are like, I gotta make sure my KD stays above 4.6, man.
I really want to
back 360 no scopes.
I really want to play horde mode now.
Yeah, all I was going to say to you is, like, it always depends on the game. And
of course, yeah.
Obviously, with Call of Duty, probably less. I haven't played Halo 4, so I can't talk about its multiplayer. But with Call of Duty, I think, you know, KDs are the new leaderboards.
Definitely,
I can understand why people do what they do. It's just, this is why, like, I still think that Call of Duty offline multiplayer is an absolute riot. Because you get a group of people in a room together playing that, it's hilarious. You know, you've got people running into each other, and if you can get a group of friends online in a private match, it's the same.
It's good, yeah.
But
I think
the problem is, though, you can't level up throughout the game that way. So
the most fun I ever had on Call of Duty was a thing like Call of Duty 4. This, people used to play it, this might hark back to joining people's lobby or getting messages from people saying this was like Mike Myers.
Yeah.
It was basically like a knife tag thing. So you go, you know, that little small map or something, you'll go on that, and one person would be Mike Myers and go around trying to knife everyone else. It was just so fun.
I think what we did in ours in Modern Warfare 2, it was right shields and throwing knives, and you couldn't use anything else. And it was on the, again, it was a really, really small map, the one with the big oil tower in the middle, I think it was.
I honestly can't remember.
Modern Warfare 2 map, what you mean.
Yeah, it was like tiny map.
In the desert.
Yeah. And all you...
Rust,
that's it, Rust. And the best thing was, like, you'd both, like, lose your throwing knives, and you'd just be looking at each other and battering each other, like, waiting for someone to die. So, yeah. Anyway, I think we should probably move on to our new section, because we've ended up, like,
rambling quite a lot,
Yeah, well, we do that, you know, guys. This isn't a proper podcast. You're just doing this to listen to our dulcet tones. Anyway, it's time for the news section.
The news!
Thank you. that's the perfect note to rejoin the podcast on. This week, we're going to be looking in our spectacularly named news section. I think, because we'll be talking about it in the next section in our interview, we'll start off with the Ouya. It's been given, according to Wired.com and plenty of other places.
Hang on, in our interview, we didn't know how to pronounce the Ouya.
Ouya.
So don't spoil the...
Maybe to create a sense of mystique, we should say Ouya.
Nah, well...
The weird thing that's coming out.
The Android-powered gaming console, which will be coming out later on in the year.
That's the one.
Well, it's been given a release date. It's meant to be launching in June in North America. And European release dates details haven't been confirmed. Places like Amazon, GameStop, Best Buy are now taking pre-orders for it.
Yeah,
it's $99 to pre-order the console, with 63,000 units already been sold. No, is it 63 or 68? It is 68,000 units, pardon me, sold through Kickstarter.
A couple of thoughts I'm going to come at, because obviously we've discussed it as a platform, you know, a lot of times in the past on the podcast, so I don't think we can really delve into that. But the two points I want to pick up is, do we consider this a new major console release in the same way we consider PS4 and Xbox Next Gen? And it'll be interesting to see, especially like on the high street, what prominence this gets in store. Because obviously, if you know the PlayStation 4 was released next week, it'd be everywhere, be right in the front of the stores. Wow, look at this new console. You know, you say GameStop is supplying. We don't know if Game in the UK will supply it. Be interesting to see if they do, how much prominence it gets in store. You know, will it get a midnight release launch? Will it get...
I don't think it'll get a midnight release because it wouldn't have the audience for it. It's kind of hard to talk about it as a UK, like as a console at the moment, because at the end of the day, it's such a unique moment in terms of what it is and how they've marketed it. So I wouldn't try to classify it, but the games coming out for it as well are Android games. It's easy to port games to it, as we'll find out later on in the show. Well, pretty easy to port games to it. But, you know, I mean, I wouldn't try and put this in a bracket just yet of it's going to be a competitor to the PS4.
No,
it's not going to be anything like that, and I don't think it will ever do the same amount of numbers. What will be interesting to see is who adopts it and how they use it.
I think this is potentially one of the most important releases in gaming. Like, forget the next generation of the consoles, because, you know, they're just going to get bigger, better online subscription, whatever. But this could potentially pave the way for indie gaming becoming a legitimate market force.
It's already, in theory, a legitimate market force, thanks to Steam.
Android, obviously, you know, there's things about Steam, it's hard to get onto that. So Steam is a great thing for indie developers, but this opens up so much more that if...
But then you've got Steam Greenlight as well. I think, in truth,
I think you're looking at this through rose-tinted glasses, Ben.
No, I wouldn't say I am, though, because, I mean, obviously, as Nicole said in the interview, you know, it's not incredibly easy to get onto Steam. I'm not saying it is, but I think...
But you just did say it was.
No, I said the Steam Greenlight to make it easier to get on there now. I'm not saying you can just put a game on there. Obviously, Steam have their things. But I think what is that for Android, you know, I would say it is already a market force, considering that you've got... It's available to anyone. You can make your own games and bung them up there. If anything, it's incredibly easy to get games onto Android.
No, my point just was, you know, obviously you can do that, but that's mainly phone-based devices.
Yeah.
I was just trying to say that, you know, having a home console that is predominantly led by indie developers, you know, it could help the way of people, indie developing becoming a much more viable route. Because also, you know, the market's not great for game developing, and studios are having to make cuts. So it means that these people that do see themselves out of jobs could just start up their own companies, and we see more of that going on.
I just think that you have to be careful when considering, because obviously for a lot of people, it will be a case of, it will still require, like, Kickstarter is a great thing, but, you know, not everyone is going to be as successful as other people. There will be Kickstarters that fail. There will be people who won't be able to get stuff off the ground. And in terms of making it viable, I think the mobile market is already made, like, for indie developers, is already looking to be like a very interesting prospect, because you can make a game, and if it gets picked up on iOS or on Android, you know, it's a massive market, and people will, like, you only have to look at stuff like, I hate to go back to it, but Temple Run, like 50 million downloads in 2 weeks for a game that was made by a small team in Raleigh, Texas. So I agree with you, like, it's going to be interesting to see how it gets on, but I wouldn't say...
Oh yeah, I'm not going to come out and say, I'm not Nostradamus and say this will change the games industry forever, but no. I'm saying it's an important release in the fact that, you know, it's doing something that's never been done before in gaming. Well, you know, it's taken things in a new direction, and it is very interesting to see what the outcome of it will be.
Yes. And finally, we'll move on to something which is probably going to inspire a little less heated debate, which is something we haven't had on the podcast for a while. We've usually been really amiable with each other, but today the claws are back out. J.J. Abrams has sort of semi-confirmed that he's working on a Half-Life or Portal movie. Basically, in an article on Polygon.com, Abrams said, quote, on the site, "It's as real as anything in Hollywood ever gets." So obviously, apart from being the hardest working man in Hollywood at the moment, would you want to see a Half-Life or Portal movie?
Going on the fact that there is yet to be a very good gaming movie.
Someone clearly didn't see Alone in the Dark. It's a cinematic classic.
There's literal tumbleweed in this room.
It's just rolling around.
I'm more ashamed of the fact that you haven't heard of Alone in the Dark.
I've heard of Alone in the Dark. I've heard it's okay.
No, I've not seen it, but from what I've heard, okay wasn't the adjective described.
Either way, you know, they've struggled. Like, I've just read recently they're going to reboot the Hitman thing, but like,
are they getting a different actor? Or
they yeah, they are.
Oh, what?
They're rebooting it. The problem with Hitman is, though, this is obviously a tangent here. A tangent on this podcast. Who would have known?
Yeah,
but. Massive fan of Hitman series, etc., etc. But the Hitman film, I watched it thinking, I know this is going to be bad, but I love Hitman, I'm going to watch it. And they just completely missed the point. It's just an action film with a bald guy as the lead. It's got
he's got
like a love interest and stuff. It's just like, this isn't Hitman at all. So if they kind of made a thriller where Agent 47's actually creeping around and it's intellectual and intelligent and they pace it nicely and there's some good cinematography in there, it could really work. But I know full well the reboot's just going to throw hundreds of millions of dollars of CGI and action sequences at it in the hope that it's going to work. I don't know that. I don't know that.
No,
that's
your opinion.
Making a presumption here, but...
Personally, I think that the only problem when it comes to making a Hitman movie is that you're asking an audience to have sympathy with a contract killer who's been genetically engineered to kill people. And you don't, like, in the game, you're never really given a reason to sympathize with him. The only reason you do is because you're playing through the missions.
That's why I say, my personal opinion is, why does Hitman have to be the protagonist?
Yeah.
In the film, why not make it a thriller where the main character is some cops investigating the Hitman 47 assassinations, and you know they could follow it around and stuff. Yeah, we've talked about this before.
Yeah, we thought like that would be,
and that would be a better way of working around it. But back to the Valve ones, I mentioned that. Oh, did you want to say?
No, go ahead.
I was going to mention the fact that the Portal one could work, but it's a puzzle game. Like, obviously, I've not played Portal 2, so I can't comment. But the first one, it's got a really nice. It's not really a story. It's not a proper storyline, but there's a nice backdrop to it that holds it all nicely together, and it's a little cool little puzzle game. But especially with like Half-Life 2 as well, you've got protagonists that don't speak. So if you are going to have Gordon Freeman in it, you know the scriptwriter is going to have to jig things around and jig the story around. But then, do you follow the story of the games? Because I think the problem with video game films is that filmmakers are always trying to just tell the story of the game through the medium of film, and I don't think that works, because the brilliant thing about video games is you are the character and the story is, you know, the experience is your story. Say Mass Effect, obviously there's, you know, two people might have pretty similar playthroughs, but people aren't going to have the same playthrough. Even games that are a linear game, there's no choices. It's still the way you play. It's still your experience. So instead of being like, okay, this is Commander Shepard, this is actually what happened, it should, these films should kind of take the universe and the characters and maybe concentrate on characters you don't see as much in the games and tell another story. Because, you know, the story of Gordon Freeman is the player's story. It's for each person, it's a slightly different story, and that's theirs. So if there was a Half-Life film, it should be set in the Half-Life world, and there should be references to Gordon Freeman, the character, and some characters should be in it, but it shouldn't just be the plot of Half-Life.
I mean, for Half-Life 2, you could probably get away with making Alex Vance the protagonist and having Gordon Freeman sort of dip in and out of the story. I think for Portal 2, Portal 2 definitely has a much grander story than the first one, and it's certainly, like, Portal 1 works because it starts off as just being a puzzle game, and as you play through the game, you realise that there's something going on. If you really look for it, there's a story in the background, whereas Portal 2, I think, pushed it, not so that it's there's more of an explicit story, and certainly some more of the challenge. Like, if you haven't played Portal 2 now, I'm sorry, I'm going to get into slightly spoiler territory here, so close your ears for the next few minutes. But, like, for example, that you're not just in test rooms, and some of the stuff you'll be doing is outside of that. So I think they do push the story further on this time, and I think you could probably make, in theory, with Portal 2, you could either make a CG, CG live action movie where you've got the co-op partners doing it together. But I also think as well you could have a Portal movie as before the game's happening, when you see the downfall of the company.
Aperture Science.
Yeah. Aperture Science, the downfall of that company, as like a, almost like a prequel to the games, where you could have it on a grander scale, and you could have, because I mean, if you look
and
at it,
have the kind of the cliche closing shot of the woman who you play
in the game waking up, or like you see her eyes waking up, roll credits, make money, you know. If anyone wants to drop us a check for all these fantastic movie ideas, like,
yeah,
we're not going to say
I'm
going to
go
out
and patent that right there.
Well, not
patent the
idea. Get some copyright
works,
on it.
Yeah.
Get some copyright on it. But, I mean, I kind of like it being J.J. Abrams, because he's one of, as much as, like, okay, obviously hardest working man in Hollywood, he's got Star Trek Into Darkness this year, Star Wars Episode 7. A lot of the stuff as well he does as a sort of executive producer kind of thing, but he has the air of the sort of man who cares about the project he works on.
The Star Trek reboot was a really good film. I enjoyed it.
I'm really looking forward to Into Darkness starring...
I didn't see the reboot, but like just from the trailers from Into Darkness, I've never watched Star Trek in my life, but it'd be something that would interest me.
It
just
definitely brings Star Trek to a modern audience.
Obviously, I wouldn't want to insult any Star Trek fans by saying I know enough about the franchise, but certainly, like, the reboot was a good movie in its own right. And in terms of the TV shows he's worked on, like, Lost, the first two seasons are, you know, I've only seen the first two seasons. I can't comment
from
there.
They are brilliant.
Yeah.
Very good. Fringe, I absolutely love Fringe. I know he's only sort of executive producer on that, but it's sort of like his brainchild. There was Alias, which was... I remember seeing some episodes on Channel 4. Like, I was probably too young to pick up, like, the running storyline, but it was, like, a good show. And so he's got his fingers in, like, a lot of pies.
Yui Boll came out and said he's going to do this. But the fact that it is J.J. Abrams, obviously there's a... Okay, it's a video game film, but if anyone was going to do it well, he'd be amongst the people you trust with it.
Exactly. I mean, at the moment, though, I think a lot of it is all just sort of like, we want to make this work, whether or not it actually will is an entirely different matter. But it's nice to see sort of like, again, obviously they made references to the fact that video games don't make good movies don't make good video, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see the developments in that one. At the very least, it shows that, you know, people have still got an attention to probably some of the better games, instead of like hearing like,
oh, make we're gonna be making Duty from Act of Valor.
You see, I would not, like, a Call of Duty movie could work. Imagine Call of Duty 4, because it's just, if you could tweak it about a bit.
I guarantee you'd come out of that cinema and just be a bit. You wouldn't. Like, you would enjoy it. Yeah.
Like that was. It's never that was idea. Enjoyable, but not groundbreaking.
Yeah. You'd be angry by something because of it. It would have just skewed. Because
you'd
the,
wanted to have played yeah. it. Yeah. I think in theory, like, you should never really try and make a first-person shooter game into a movie.
Doom was actually the first person to shoot a bit.
Apparently, as well, that was one of the best bits of the film. I remember reading ages
ago. Oh, have you not seen it?
I've seen the first person bit because I went out on my way to watch on YouTube. I've not seen like
the thing.
I just like the fact like, he turns around a corner and something pops out of him. It's like, oh.
I enjoy Dwayne Johnson, and I somewhat enjoyed that film, but it just. I can't believe that the cool thing about Doom is they go to Mars and they find an opening to hell and it's creatures from hell coming out. But then they change it to like a virus
yeah.
and people infect. Like, why do that?
Mm.
I'm about to say to make it... I don't even want to use the words to make it more believable about a movie that takes place on Mars. Anyway, I think we should now move on to our interview.
Yep.
Yeah, let's
do this. No problem. How's it going this morning, mate?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm a bit hungover, which is why I can't even remember simple names.
That's okay. We've all been there. Callum, do you want to ask the first question then?
Yeah, well, we just want to talk about... Well, if you want to talk about your game, really, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, please.
Yeah?
Yeah, go for it.
So I'm making a game called Fist of Awesome. And it's the like the largest undertaking I've ever done in computer game development, and it's going quite well. I did a Kickstarter last year to try and raise some funds for it, and so the Kickstarter basically involved a little video of me walking around introducing the game world, which is a horrible version of the current day, but the world has been taken over by bears, and you, as a lumberjack, have to kind of sort out the problems which have made the world be overrun with bears. And so it ends, it's the most ludicrous plot ever. But eventually you travel back in time and you have to stop the bears taking over the Earth. And it's all part of like an alien conspiracy. This is the reason that the Earth has been taken over by bears. And so you have to basically save the universe. You're a lumberjack, you travel through time, you punch bears in the face and you save the universe. It's a very small, humble game.
Have you ever thought about selling your plot rights to M. Night Shyamalan? That kind of sounds like the kind of film he'd make.
Oh, yeah. No, maybe like in his earlier days. He's bad movies now.
I mean, the only thing, if I was going to like pick holes in it, why bears and not badgers?
It's a lot easier to like have a bear the same size as the main character.
That's very true. But yeah. What's it like then going from being working at studios like Codemasters or Real Time Words and like massive projects to sort of going down to a project like your more personal project?
It's the best way to describe it is it's kind of like being like let off the leash or something, because I always wanted to put humor into games I worked on, but especially when you work in a big company, they don't like you putting any kind of personality into the product. Because it's always got to go within the company line and all this kind of stuff. And so like now I can make my own games and I can do literally whatever I want. Like, I guess, unless like it makes Apple unhappy, but just punching bears in the face, they seem to be okay with that so far. So, like, it's just, I have complete freedom now to do whatever I want. If I want to have the main character be a lumberjack who travels through time and punches bears in the face, like, that's fine. Like, there's absolutely no problem with that. If I said that when I worked at Codemasters, they were like, but we make rally games, that makes no sense. So it's just really nice. It's like, it's a lot of hard work, though, because I've foolishly decided to try and do almost everything myself. It means I'm the bottleneck for almost every single thing to do with the game. Which is, it's a little bit frustrating sometimes, but it's worth it in the end. And when I show people the game, it's my game, and I really feel like it's a little bit of me, and that's what I really like about it.
Is there then, like, more pressure on yourself to do really well, because it's, you know, your project, you're involved with everything?
Yeah, like, well, especially after the Kickstarter thing, because before it was just, like, I was making the game, and it was for me, and if it nobody bought it or played it, and it didn't really matter. But then after the Kickstarter, there's like 960 people or something who actually do want to play the game and really do hope it's good, because they've already given me money towards it. And so I feel a little bit of pressure from that, because I don't want to let anyone down.
Did you did you think you'd get as much money as you did, or like with the high donations?
No, not at all. I honestly thought, like, when I did the whole campaign, it was basically, I just thought, this is a bit fun, and like it'd be useful for like having a better computer and everything development. But I didn't actually think it would take off the way it did. Yeah, because I got like over 200% of what I asked for, which was just obscene. And like, there's three people as well gave me £500 each to be characters in the game. And I was like, this is a game I'm making, like, in their spare bedroom. And people have given me, like, so much money. And they really care about, like, people, like, realize that I would have backed it three times over and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, my God, it's just this little game that I'm making. And people have, like, they've already put, like, such hope in me. And it's terrifying, but brilliant, but terrifying.
And we also noticed as well, you've decided you're going to develop it for the... Actually, the first question we should ask is, how do you pronounce Uwa?
We can't
decide.
I don't
know. I pronounce it as
Ouya. Ouya.
Ouya. Yeah. That's what I would have gone with.
Yeah. So, how have you? What made you decide you wanted to develop for that as well?
That was it was another quite random thing. Like, I was in the middle of the Kickstarter campaign, and so I had like all these people like asking me questions all the time about it, and a lot of people asked me about the Ouya. Like, are you making an Ouya version? And I was like, I wasn't really planning on it. But quite a lot of people were asking. I was like, okay, right, fine. If somehow I get an Ouya for free, I'll make an Ouya version. Not actually thinking that was something would ever happen. And yeah, so like Ouya made this competition where if you got your game tweeted about enough and they noticed it, then they'd give like 10 developers a free Ouya. And so I just said, like, I just was bored one afternoon. I went, oh, I could probably do that. So just wrote a tweet. Retweet this if you want to punch bears in the face, travel through time on a new year. And didn't think anything about it, and then I got like 90 retweets or something within a week. And yeah, the Ouya guys like gave me, I was the first person to get to win this competition. and get like a free Ouya. And so I went from not really even knowing what an Ouya was very much to having one. I was like, what's this night? And so the start of the year, I got it in January, and then I had to like port the game to Android as well, so I could like release it at the same time as the iPhone version. So I had the Android version almost running by the time I got my Ouya. And all I did was I just kind of plugged it in and clicked build and send, and it all just worked. It was like amazing, because it's all based on Android. And so it's quite a nice little system.
Yeah,
I'm playing with it just now, actually. It's nice.
I was going to say, what's your first impression of Ouya? Do you think it's going to be a viable console when it's released? Do you think it'll be popular and good?
I really hope it is. Like, I think it's got a lot of potential, and I think the fact that the Ouya guys, because I've met a few of them now, I think the fact they've taken the whole indie ethos on board, and they really want to help like indie developers, and they're not like, they're basically the opposite of Microsoft, who like want to make you go out of your way to not be an indie and be on their system. Whereas the Ouya guys, like, they've given me a system for free so I can make the game. It's like, it's a really nice, like that whole idea, like, I really like. And the actual system itself, it has a lot of potential. It's quite a powerful little box for being $100 or whatever it is. It's like, I compare it to like being like a kind of high-end tablet or something, which when you're like making little games like I am, is more than enough. And I've seen like some demos running now that are pretty impressive, like using like proper like 3D graphics and stuff. So I reckon it could do well. I think the problem is, because they won't have the same marketing muscle behind like the PlayStation and Xbox like that, it probably won't ever do those numbers. But as long as it's sustainable, I reckon it could be really good.
Yeah, definitely. I think we all hope it does well, because we rant a lot, well, me in particular, about publishers and what they do to developers and stuff. So it'll be nice to see the indie market really expand and grow, and people to be able to enjoy games that aren't Call of Duty and stuff every year.
Yeah, totally. And like, I think one thing that's really, like, I think one of the things that will work in EU's favour is because they base it on Android, if people are already developing, like, for just, like, normal Android handsets, it's so simple to get it up and running. Like, all you have to do is, like, add support for the controller, and that's it. So, like, it shouldn't be that expensive to create games for it if those games are already on another Android device. So hopefully it would, like, encourage people to develop for it.
Can you tell us what it was like to work with Echo Level at all?
Echo Level? Oh, Echo Level was ace. Because I'm really terrible at describing what I want. So I basically I want something that's a bit upbeat and a bit somber and a bit scary. And he'll come back with like he won't have estimate until like 5 minutes before I need it, and then he'll go, "Okay, I did this. Is this okay?" And it's like the most amazing bit of music you've ever heard in your entire life. He's done that like 2 or 3 times. Like just the very last one, you'll go, "Okay, I'm not sure, but maybe this." I'm like, "Oh my god, this bit is amazing." Yeah, he's a lovely guy, and he's ridiculously talented. But like the one thing I've never been that confident about is like kind of doing game music. And so that was the one thing I've delegated to someone else, and I'm so glad I chose him because he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant.
Something I wanted to ask is, in the media, a lot of attention, especially from the NRA, is saying that video games influence children, and all these, you know, gun shootings are down to violent video games. Are you worried that if your game becomes highly popular, influential children will start punching bears in the face?
Influential children?
Oh.
Easily influenced
children. Easily influenced children.
Daughter or something. I was thinking about maybe putting a disclaimer at the start of the game that just says, "Warning, this is all a fictional world. Please do not punch bears in the face. They love the animals, but they're also wild animals, and they will probably rip your face off." So I might do that just to be on the safe side.
Yeah.
People have asked me before, like, am I worried about PETA coming after me and stuff, and saying like I'm glorifying the abuse of animals, which I think is unfair. But
no, I think if anyone looks at the game, I think they can tell it's a. I think the alien time travel plotline might throw them off a little bit about that.
We'll see you anyway.
I guess one final question is then, do you have a release date for Fists of Awesome?
I'm hoping, like, it's all kind of depends just how development goes, but I'm hoping to release it around March, April for iOS, Android, and Ouya. And then there'll be another version later in the summer for PC and Mac, which will have local multiplayer.
And will that be coming out on Steam as well?
If Steam let me go on their store, yes. No. But, like, I'd love to, but it's not up to me, so I'll need to just wait and see.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, fingers crossed for that. Nicole, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you. Yeah.
Enjoy the rest of your day, mate. Have a
good one. Hope your hangover gets better.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, wasn't that fantastic? What a great interview.
And for the first of many, we're going to try and make that a weekly section. If you've got anyone that you'd want us to see get on the podcast.
Realistically.
Yeah, let's not. Any tweets for Gabe Newell will be classified under hopeful.
Not happening.
But not happening.
You could try and get Nick Cage, maybe.
I don't think that will happen.
Get his attention by just camping outside his house.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, so then, this week, we're going to... If you've been following us on Twitter, this is... Unfortunately, it's less like our community interaction section, although we will bring a little bit of that in this week, but we'll start off with our... we've been running a competition on Twitter to... We're giving away a £10 game gift voucher. This is
legitimately, we're actually going to give away.
Yeah, this isn't also advertising for gaming. We want to give something back to the people who listen to our podcast. We also want to get in a few more people. So we thought this is a nice way of just getting something out there. Basically, if you go onto our Twitter feed, you'll see more than a few tweets.
We'll put a few more out there as well.
Yeah, basically, it's just, if you're following us, that's great. Just retweet, follow. Next week, we are going to... We'll randomly choose one person. We'll probably give... I think, to make this all nice and open, what I think we'll do is we'll give every entrant a number. We'll then go online, find a random number picker. There's thousands of them. It will randomly pick the number, I mean, and then we'll have our winner from that. I think we'll say nobody who we're at uni with or, like, directly related to the podcast. So... James Hibbard and Carl Waller, if you're listening to us, we're sorry, but you can't win. We want to make sure that it's, you know, the wider world.
Yeah.
And it's not something where it's a case of, oh, here you go, mate. Cheers, mate. So, yeah. Keep on Twitter for that. I mean, at the end of the day, all it is simple. A click.
Spread the word as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you like listening to us, then spread the word. If you don't talk about us, because we want people to listen. So if you don't like us,
shut your mouth.
How have you managed to make it this far in, though? Like, if you don't like us.
If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Wise words from Mr. Alexander.
Or unless you were going to say, well, I didn't like it, but I think you'd love it, so I'd check it out.
Exactly.
So, although then is that sort of like a backhanded, like, compliment, like, oh, this is up your street.
Yeah, is that a kind of like...
It's like a backhanded insult. It's like, yeah. You would like this.
It's not for my refined tastes. So, already... Matt's ruined the community interaction section by talking about what Tommy Spring wanted to say.
Well, I thought, you know, I'd get it out there while I could, while it was fresh in the memory. I am an expert on the Angolan mineral deposits.
In the stock exchange.
Yeah.
And their economical decline.
Yes, didn't you study that as your master's in PhD, one of your modules?
It's one of many, yeah. It's one of many. I like, there's so many, I'm a bit rough around the edges when it comes to them, but I am considered an expert on... economic, you know, I'm the stock exchange, I'm well clued up on, and Angolan mineral deposits was my field of expertise.
Yeah, so perfect. Bill Roundtree, if you've made it this far into the podcast, congratulations. We hope you have, because Bill was looking for a podcast to listen to, and Callum, our social media ambassador guru,
I basically went into search and typed gaming podcast to see who was talking about it. And he was looking for one, and I said,
"You literally sent a treat, say with
cough
sound or something."
Yeah.
So, Bill, if you've listened this far, hopefully you've
welcome
enjoyed
aboard.
It. Welcome aboard the good ship.
Please spread
disc.
The worst word. Enter our competition.
Please spread the worst word about us, because I think hopefully we'll get a reputation as a train wreck, and more people will listen. No.
I don't see the logic in that.
Wow.
That's some flawed science right there.
The logic in that is it's like a car crash, but you can't take your eyes off it.
Okay.
That is a cliche there. So.
But you wouldn't have to have your eyes to be
you'd
able to
You'd have to have
use
your
this.
Earballs listened on
yeah.
to it, though.
I don't think you'd have... I think you'd stay attuned to a car crash for the sounds and audio.
I'm just taking a cliche, mate. You were...
You've taken a cliche and you've completely thrown it at the wrong kind of spectrum.
All right. Oh, wow.
That cliche
just...
was a bit of a car crash.
Whoa, yes.
Oh, that's awful.
That was better than your one.
Still.
Ooh.
Anyway, on top of that, we've also had Adam Roche, who used to be, who's the editor of 7-Bit Arcade. I mean, you should check them out. They're all right. Quite a good, quite
if
a
you
nice
like,
little.
If you like music, because it used to be a gaming music site, now it's just music.
If you like music,
but
go there.
It's a very good site. I highly recommend you go visit.
I mean, obviously, I've got, you know, like, we don't have any of ulterior motives, because we weren't ever called the 7-Bit Arcade Podcast. Or you
We
know,
actually
I,
never were we?
We were the semi-official 7-Bit
Podcast. I thought we were just the 7-Bit
Podcast, yeah.
Oh, okay, 7-Bit Podcast. And then, I mean, I still write from, so I have a...
Go check out my articles.
That was a quick drop. That was
yeah.
That was subtle. I like it.
until we brought out how what it was and became
and
completely
Tom
unsubtle.
Williams and Tom Williams this week also he dropped a little bit of a truth bomb on us. He said I met Alex McLeish when he was Birmingham manager. He's a pretty imposing bloke. I don't think I'd fancy fighting him. In truth, I wouldn't fancy fighting him as well. Nobody would.
That's the fact that he rage quit as manager quicker than Ben.
I did see that and enjoyed it.
Like a how's Rochdale game?
No, they fired me. But it's okay. I started a new career as Everton and won my first 10 matches in a row.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah. I know what I'm doing. I just got thrown into a difficult scenario. But unfortunately, there's obviously as well, there's quite a few, there was actually this week quite a few retweets, but that's people retweeting the fact they can win. £10 game gift
voucher.
Honestly,
people, we're not...
£10.
It's not like a van.
Best game voucher ever cost £10.
Imagine us as a van.
Now I'm interrupting Callum.
Imagine us as a van, and it's a shady van, and the windows are blacked out, and on the side it says free candy. Okay? We are inside that van, and we are actually giving away free candy.
Exactly.
You should be trusting of us. We are...
We may appear distrustful and diabolical, but we got big hearts.
Basically, free stuff is coming your way. I've been Dan Tyra.
I've been Callum Alexander.
I've been Matt Mace.
And I've actually been Ben Tyra. Check us all out next week. See you in a bit. Bye.
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 Bye.